Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman, and it's a pleasure to be with you once again. And we are now Wednesday, December 30th, the day before New Year's Eve. And of course, we have the Grizzlies facing the Celtics. It's been a whirlwind of activity to start the season, you know, in a lot of ways none of us expected, but here we are. Of course, you know, the news about Ja Morant came out yesterday, but plenty to talk about. And as I mentioned earlier this week, I'm very happy to welcome a familiar name, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, Joel Molinax, has joined us for this episode. Joe, how are you again, sir?
I'm just so proud of you, Sean, for being better than Mark King and not being a coward. And bringing me back on the show on a regular basis. You know, Mark was not brave enough to endure the Molinax bump. It was just too successful. And you're taking that on with a headstrong faith in the Lord above and belief in yourself. And you know what? I appreciate that. So shout out to Mark. I like giving him a hard time. And thank you, Sean, for having me back on. I love the work you do over for us at GBB. And, of course, Locked On Grizzlies is a big part of that for you, too. And I'm happy to be on with you.
Well, you're welcome anytime. And then the main reason I enjoy getting you on is just to be able to talk some Grizzlies basketball. And, you know, Joe, we've got plenty to talk about. You know, I think this far into the season, we would have hoped that we would have had plenty to talk about, but not necessarily in the form that it has come. Monday night, I'm sure many of us had a near heart attack, not the best way, but it seems like an appropriate way to end 2020. But of course, Ja Morant's injury, stepping on the foot of TLC from the Nets. I can't ever get TLC's name right, so I'm going to go with initials. But, you know, obviously the news today, Ja Morant, as was kind of initially, you know, hinted at on Monday, grade 2 sprain, out 3 to 5 weeks. But, you know, just in general, your thoughts on it and just kind of take us through, you know, kind of how you process the news since it unexpectedly happened Monday night.
There is nothing more amazing, Sean, than the amount of doctors that are on Twitter. It's phenomenal how many people were able to immediately diagnose what exactly was wrong with Ja Morant. It was as if he was all of their patients and they had access to all his medical records. Listen, it looked bad and there's no denying that. And the way that Morant reacted, we know how tough Ja is. That was nerve wracking, but somebody made a point and I thought it was a good one. Anybody who's ever played basketball, football, whatever sport, and you're competitive with it, you're not just out there screwing around. It can be a pickup game, but, you know, there's plenty of competitive pickup games. You roll your ankle like that and it hurts like hell. Right. And I think when you do it and you're not expecting to, obviously, as I believe the way you pronounce it is Timothée Luwawu Cabarrot. The way that TLC had his foot there, it made me think of Happy Gilmore and the big giant guy, the ball strike his big dumb foot. That's what I thought of that guy's foot in that moment. The way that his foot struck TLC's foot, it didn't look good. And, you know, the wheelchair was a terrible visual and all that stuff. But it makes sense that this is the outcome in terms of 3 to 5 weeks, a really bad sprain. And the idea of Morant being in so much pain, again, if you've had that type of sprain and you don't expect it, you know that feeling. With Ja, the thing with him is you don't know his medical history. So you don't know how many times he sprained that ankle. That might be his first really bad ankle sprain. That might be a question that at some point down the road you ask. The first one's the worst one, right? And then your ankle kind of stretches out and that sort of thing. And, you know, and when you play at a basketball at an elite level, of course, it's a completely different injury because of the amount of, you know, of lift on your jump or the amount of speed in your run, however you may sprint it sprain it. So the fascinating thing about Ja is the way that it played out, the way that it looked, kind of adding to that online hysteria from all the suddenly massive amounts of doctors that are on NBA Twitter. And it worked out exactly as, you know, you would expect when they said the Grizzlies, being they, said that he had an ankle sprain. Okay, they'll get an MRI. They obviously did the x-ray at the arena. They didn't find any fractures. They do the MRI, they see it's a grade 2 sprain. That's about a month. And I think that when you look at the month prognosis, and you look at what that means in a condensed season for the Memphis Grizzlies, because he's going to miss about a fourth of the season, roughly, if he's right at that four-week time frame. And to be honest with you, the Grizzlies will probably hold him out longer than that. It does call into question, not necessarily do you tank, because, I mean, Justice Winslow should be back in the next couple weeks, theoretically speaking, if we go off of the rough guidelines that Zach Kleiman has given us. Jaren Jackson Jr. Potentially could be back around the same time as Ja. The question now becomes, in a season that you were always kind of aiming for the play-in anyway, can you mount a good enough record without your very best player? And that is very much Ja Morant at this stage, the way that he started the season. Can you find a way to put together and cobble together a rotation to get enough wins to, you know, only be a few games under 500 so that you're in that mix when Ja and Jaren and all your horses are back at the stable for you? So that's really, you know, obviously first and foremost, you want Ja to be healthy and safe. They're going to take the long-term view of this thing because it doesn't make sense to rush him back in this season in particular with all the obstacles and adversity that they're already facing. But at the same time, Ja Morant's a competitor. You know, Ja Morant is somebody who is going to ask every day as he starts to feel better, you know, closer to that three-week timeline. You know, Martin Luther King Day is, you know, 2 or 3 weeks away. Does he, and I'm speculating here, knowing his mental makeup, does he use that as an aiming point? He wants to get back for that national game. Does he allow for the performance staff and the coaching staff and the front office to kind of have their way heard? And the Grizzlies that are left behind here in the wake of the Morant injury, how are they going to respond? I think that if part of our goal for this season, and you and I, Sean, talked about this last time I was on, if part of the goal is to figure out who the hell belongs here next to Ja and Jaren as they enter next season, which will have more expectation attached to it, you're about to figure out a lot about these dudes without Ja Morant on the court. And that sounds counterproductive and counterintuitive, but you're going to learn a lot about the mental makeup, the tenacity, the toughness. And when you get into those playoff series, folks that have been following this team for a while, you know that when you're in the alley, so to speak, you want to know who's going to be next to you, ready to fight. And we're going to see who's going to have that tenacity and that toughness about them to try to grit these wins out as best they can without their best player on the floor.
And exactly. And you don't want it to happen in this way. But, you know, I there's no positive that comes out of this. But however, there are some definite things to gain from it, from the expanded opportunity now that you're going to see certain players in. And we'll get to this player specifically in a little bit. But, you know, obviously when it comes to Ja Morant, the way that his game is orchestrated, you know, a lot relies on his legs, his athleticism, his speed. And the one thing that the Grizzlies want to avoid is, though the injury itself that resulted from the incident may not be that bad and it may not have any long-term effects, you don't want it to be lingering either to where it potentially causes him issue for the rest of the season. You want him back at more than 100%. So it could be into February, maybe even Valentine's Day. But Joe, my question that I pose to you is this. We saw a glimpse of how things were going to work out. And again, lineups we'll discuss in a moment. But in terms of scheme, the Grizzlies were so reliant on Ja Morant's ability to get in that lane and on playmaking. You now have, between him and Melton, you've got 10 expected assists a night out of the lineup. And this team needs that playmaking to really stay consistent. Do you feel things will pretty much remain the same as far as the approach offensively and defensively? Or could you potentially see changes in Taylor Jenkins' approach? You're not going to replicate Ja's production, but with the roster that's in place, do you see any changes on how the Grizzlies approach offense and defense?
To me, the main difference between the Jaren injury and the Ja injury is you can't replace Jaren, but you can replicate him, in the aggregate. You can make up those threes. You can make up those blocks. You can. You don't have to replace a ton of rebounds, as you know people have gotten fired up about on Twitter about Jaren. The spacing he provides, I'm not trying to diminish what Jaren Jackson Jr. is because he's extremely important. But what makes Ja Morant so special is his athleticism, his ability to get to the basket almost at will. the way that he has now paired that in a small sample size of this season with a complete control and understanding of tempo, of pace, how to let guys into his space whenever he wants to, making them think they're close, and then creating even more space out of that hesitation. There's so much that he's added in just one, you know, or essentially two off seasons with the way the bubble played out, that there's a lot to his game that can be replicated. Like, I think the assist aspect, a couple more here from Kyle Anderson, a couple more there from a Desmond Bane. You really get on Grayson Allen. Justice Winslow eventually comes back. There's pieces that you can maybe filter that or assemble that on the fringes, excuse me. The athleticism, the fact that he was able to do so much of that drive and kick stuff without multiple screens off of just one pick and roll combination, you're not going to be able to replicate that. That's not going to happen because that is the elite athleticism. So what's going to be fascinating to watch Taylor Jenkins do in the next couple of weeks is try to find ways to get those looks that guys were getting because of the one cut or the one dribble off of a pick from Jonas Valanciunas. The fact that John was able to get to the basket so easily at times, a lot of the time, that's not going to happen anymore because you don't have any other athletes like John Morant on the team that can dribble and do the things that Ja could do in addition to that athletic ability. So I think what you really need to see from Taylor Jenkins these next couple of weeks is how does he change the scheme within their base concepts to get them as many opportunities for those assists, to get a Desmond Bane an open look for three that he might have gotten because Ja just blew by his defender and help defense had to come. That's not going to happen now. Do you set the additional screen? Do you prioritize ball movement and trying to do a lot of more swinging of the ball from one corner to the other? There's ways to try to get those looks, but you can't replicate the raw. You can replace the numbers in a lot of ways, but the way that you get there, the process has to be adjusted because you have nobody else, and in fairness, nobody else in the NBA, aside from maybe one or two teams, nobody else has a guy like John Morant that can combine all those factors, piece them together, and create offensive opportunity for others. So they're going to have to lean on the mind of Taylor Jenkins and these coaches, and also the physical presence of a Jonas Valanciunas, the playmaking talk from Dylan Brooks earlier in the season. That all is going to have to really be amplified if they're going to find a way to get the openings that they had with Ja on the floor now that he's gone, for now.
And the other thing that I think comes from this, Joe, is that, you know, I agree with you. You're not going to be able to replicate what you lost with Ja Morant. And this kind of feels a little bit like the bubble. You know, it's probably a worse situation because now we're without Jaren and Ja. But, you know, we kind of had, you know, a makeshift lineup with expected injuries that we had. And now we're dealing with that again. But to me, it makes me appreciate even more how well the Grizzlies took advantage of the things that they could control last year. Because again, as me and you have discussed before on several occasions, the good thing about this year is that there's no bad outcomes. You know, this team, rightfully so, the best outcome for them is making the playoffs. And this team is going to continue to do all that they can. It's just hard to see them consistently winning with the players that they have in place. It's just you know, a natural, you know, development when you lose your best players. But, you know, I know that there's been a lot of talk this afternoon on Twitter and things like that. You know, you saw the take-a-thon charts and all that different stuff. But that still now really comes into play, is that even though things outside of our control have not gone the way that we had hoped, because over the past 18 months, the whole organization has done so well with the things that it can control, we're still in a bit of a beneficial situation. To me, while there's no positives from Morant, that really is a silver lining that, you know, if the playoffs may not seem that realistic now, there certainly is, you know, the outcome of, you know, potentially a high draft pick, whatever you want to call it. It just reiterates how impressive and how fortunate we are as Grizzlies fans to see how well the Grizzlies have taken things or taken advantage of things within their control over the past 18 months.
And a lot of success when it comes to a small market is that development of an identity, that development of a tenacity, a chemistry, a personality that really only shines through and is revealed in tough times. You're not going to have, right now they have an elite talent like Ja Morant, but he's 21 years old. LeBron James is not coming to Memphis unless it's by the draft. Giannis Antetokounmpo Kevin Durant. Unless you're drafting those dudes, they're not coming to the city. So when you're fortunate enough to get a player like Ja, you need to build around him and maximize his talents. And that's something that we've talked about before, the idea of figuring out who the best players next to Jaren and Ja are. Again, it sounds counterintuitive to say you can get a better window into that without both Jaren and Ja out there. But if this team is going to compete for championships 2, 3, 4 years down the road with Jaren and Ja as the cornerstones, some of these guys that are currently on the roster are going to have to be a part of that process. And some of these guys that are on the roster now are about to be tested in a way that they've never been tested before. But the good news is some of them have faced adversity like this, like Dylan Brooks, who in his rookie season, that was the year before Jaren got here, he was asked with Mike Conley out, with Mark Gasol out at times. Mark was the one that was there a primary amount of the time, but with Conley out for an extended period, Dylan Brooks was asked to be so much more than any rookie should ever be asked to do. That's a second round pick, but he showed up to work every day. He busted his tail. He defended the best player on the team every night on the perimeter. He was an offensive weapon at times. He was inefficient, and a lot of the stuff that has laid the groundwork, for Dylan Brooks' disdain happened in that rookie season. But you know what? We talked about that alley a little while ago. I would go and fight in that alley with Dylan Brooks any day because I know he's going to fight his tail off and he's going to compete. And I know the character of that guy as a basketball player, and he is going to be a competitor every single night, good or bad, right or wrong. Rich or poor, sickness and in health, till death do you part, you can count on Dylan Brooks to show up and compete when he's healthy. That's big. Can we say the same thing about DeAnthony Melton when he returns, right? Can we say the same thing about Desmond Bane, Grayson Allen, Kyle Anderson, Jonas Valanciunas, up and down the list, the guy Tyus Jones? Even more than their play as basketball players, I want to see how they respond to this adversity, how they react, how they find themselves as players and as people willing to do what it takes to try to make up for what Ja brings. They may well fail, Sean. They might fail. They might lose the next 10 games, and we might be, you know, doing prospect previews on Cade Cunningham and Jalen Suggs and all these guys that are going to be in the top five. That's very possible, okay? But I think that in the process, win or lose, we'll find a lot out about what it means to be a key cog in this Grizzlies machine moving forward because of what the mental makeup, the tenacity they display is of these guys. And I'm really fascinated to watch it play out. Some people say they don't want to watch because Ja isn't playing. I'm the opposite. You know, that season where they had the hateful eight and all that stuff and the all the injuries, similar concept. You want to see who's going to show up and compete. Who's going to lay down and lose interest when things are at their worst, and who is going to rise up and say, I'm going to be the one that's going to help us get through this. And they might fall on their face, but you learn from those shortcomings way more than you ever learn from the successes. And that's what I want to see. Maybe they have success, and that would be great too. But being in front of this daunting task, how do you respond? That's where you learn the most about people. And I think that we're going to see a lot of that from these young Grizzlies over these next few weeks with both Ja and Jaren out.
And we could promote, you know, how awesome – you know, it would be to land a high pick in this draft that is strong in the one area of need that the Grizzlies have, which is wing and wing creation. But, you know, at the end of the day, you don't tank, you know, and that's not even a, you know, word to look into the vocabulary. Because the one thing that you don't do is you don't sit here and all of a sudden, just because something that's unexpected occurred, you don't sit here and ask these players to completely change their mindset, to take away from all the hard work that they've done. If they know the obstacles, they know how much harder the road ahead is going to be. Hit your wagon to them and trust that they'll figure it out. And, you know, whether there are success or shortcomings, there probably is going to be a bit of both. You know, everyone each player, the roster itself, and the franchise, you know, as a whole, will be better off for it. But of course, there has to be a plan. And with the pieces that are in place, the Grizzlies gave a little bit of a hint of some things that could work going forward with the roster that they have. Coming up, we're going to talk about Slo-Mo the superhero, but also some lineup variations that me and Joe think may work for the Grizzlies moving forward. Are we ready for some football? College football bowl season is in full swing, and we're getting down to the games that offer the most intriguing matchups. NFL Week 17 is here, and while it can be crazy when it comes to who will and won't play, I can tell you a place that will certainly keep you informed and give you the best lines out there to help you not only enjoy the games, but profit, and that's betonline.ag. That's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. There are plenty of games this week that are going to be entertaining to watch in terms of the NFL. So many playoff positions are on the line, and with that being said, there are factors to consider to certainly make sure that not only can you enjoy the games, but profit a bit from them. BetOnline.ag has some great lines for you to consider when it comes to your wagers. Also, college football season is in full swing. Obviously, as we just mentioned, the championship games, the college football playoff is right around the corner. Why not take a bit more time, take 5 minutes of your day, really look into the factors that are going to impact the game, and while you're enjoying it, make a little bit of a profit as well. Really enhance your fandom this time of year. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get into the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a $50 bonus welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbooks experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at BetOnline_AG to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your sign up today. Hashtag BetOnline. Betting on the NBA and the Grizzlies doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks and quick-hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to Locked On Bet to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by BetOnline.ag wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast with Joe Mullinax. And Joe, forgive me, but happy holidays to you and your family. How I should have asked you this before, but how was your Christmas and any New Year's plans?
It was different. Christmas was different, as it was for a lot of folks, I would imagine. My wife and my daughters and I spent the day at home. We did a little short-term quarantine, so that we could send our daughters to my in-laws for this week. They hadn't seen them in approximately 6 months or so. So I thought it was a good idea, and that they're enjoying time down in Richmond, Virginia with my wife's parents. And my wife is going down there today, Wednesday. So I am going to be batching it up, bachelor pad style, which I haven't done in a long time, for New Year's. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do with myself. I know what I'm doing with myself. Here on Wednesday, I'm covering the Grizzly Celtics game for Grizzly Bear Blues because I have nothing better to do. But New Year's Eve, I'm not quite sure. Maybe, you know, get caught up on some schoolwork, get ready for my football season that's going to be starting here in Virginia in a month or so. I have plenty that I could do, but I'll probably just sleep in and, you know, maybe catch up on The Mandalorian or something.
Hey, it's definitely worth it. You will not be disappointed. But one thing that I can tell you we have not been disappointed in, and kind of a Christmas present, you know, this time of year, is the play of Kyle Anderson. It is just, you know, I know it's only been three games, but it seems like there is certainly a different player here now, one that's healthy, one that's comfortable in the system. You know, the talk started a year ago, Joe, you know, is Kyle Anderson really a fit in Taylor Jenkins' system? And there was plenty of evidence to make that a valid question. But as Kyle in the preseason got healthier, once March came around into the bubble, there seemed to be more fluidity with him. You know, there seemed to be production comfort. Just playing style that worked. And of course, I don't know if what he's doing right now is sustainable, but it certainly is an effective player that's there with Kyle Anderson. Your thoughts and what has stood out to you about Kyle and just how needed is that right now, of course, with all the injuries?
For the record, and I don't do this lightly because people like to point out all the time on social media and on the blog, Sean, you do this as long as I've done it. I have quite a list of receipts of times I was wrong, right? I'm the guy that wanted to trade Zach Randolph instead of Rudy Gay. Wrong answer. I'm the guy that wanted to sign Chandler Parsons. That didn't work out. I'm the guy who loves all these oft-injured wings, who has all these terrible takes. That's me. But you know what, Sean? I get things right, too. And Kyle Anderson is a player that I have always, and I have receipts, been a fan of his game. I think he does everything well except for score the basketball. And in the last three games, he sure as hell looks like he can score the basketball. So any trade discussions that came from GBB or from me in particular were driven by the idea that Taylor Jenkins last season, look up the box scores, there were times where Kyle Anderson barely played, didn't play at all. And instead, he played my favorite, Jay Crowder. And I'm going to try to not rant because I get told I rant too much about Jay Crowder or Solomon Hill. No disrespect to those guys. In my opinion, Kyle Anderson is a better basketball player than both of those players. He should have gotten those minutes, but he wasn't willing for whatever reason to shoot the three. And Taylor Jenkins clearly prioritized that. It's why Anthony Tolliver started in the bubble. Now, if it's because of full health, you've got a Kyle Anderson, who I believe is second on the team in three-point attempts right now through three games, and he is converting them at a 41.2% clip, Sean. That's impressive. I don't think that's sustainable. I think that's a fair point. But what is sustainable is him being a threat from range that you have to respect. And that matters, because we talked in the last segment about trying to find ways to recreate the space that John Morant could get simply by being the best athlete on the floor. A little bit of space comes from Kyle Anderson being more of a threat. I wrote about in my piece, essentially calling out the coward that continued to refuse to start Desmond Bain over at GBB on Tuesday. I wrote about how Kyle Anderson could be a point forward. You know, he called himself a point guard in the post game after the Monday victory over the Brooklyn Nets. And Kyle can easily run that. More so than D'Anthony Melton. I think that in the short term, because Tyus Jones, you can make a real argument, he is the Grizzlies struggling the most right now. I don't know that it makes sense to move Tyus up to the starting role when he is out of rhythm as badly as he is at the moment. So if you're asking me, yes, I'm very impressed with Kyle Anderson. Yes, I think him as a threat to score, more so than he's ever been before, that's sustainable. Scoring 20-plus points a night probably isn't sustainable. But the fact that you have to respect him in that way, in a way that you never had to before, allows for other guys to have more openings to score because they can't just ignore Kyle Anderson as a shooter anymore. And that allows for the Grizzlies to put him in a point forward position. I mean, I know it's your podcast, Sean, and this is kind of a cardinal sin, but I'll ask you, now that John Morant is out, who do you want handling the basketball more than anybody else, given the way the Grizzlies have started these last three games? Tyus Jones
is my answer, and that was what I was going to get
stats
with you.
SAC? Have you seen Tyus Jones' stats?
I have.
He is playing terrible.
He is, and here's the reason why, and this was what I was going to get into, because it's a fair point. I read your article. I read your article over at Grizzly Bear Blues, and I get where you're coming from. I certainly do. But the reason why I want Tyus Jones in the starting line, I mentioned it, a few other people I saw on Twitter had mentioned it as well. The lineup that I really like last night that, you know, you saw effectively play the last, you know, 4 minutes of the quarter in the fourth, I believe, it was Tyus Jones, Dylan, Kyle, Brandon Clark, and Jonas Valanciunas. And the reason why I think that that is the lineup that makes sense for me, both to start and end the game, is because you can make a case. I know that Tyus is struggling. He struggled to begin last year. In my opinion, it's been three games. But that's the lineup that I feel gives you the most scenarios where you have multiple options in, you know, legitimately important situations. On defense, you've got two difference makers on defense and Kyle Anderson and Brandon Clark. It showed last night when they were playing. They were able to stall the Nets offense to give them a chance to win. They played the best defense that they had all year, in my opinion. When it comes to playmaking ability, you have Tyus and you have Kyle. When it comes to being able to set up shots for Dylan, for Brandon, and the one that doesn't have the ball, you have Tyus and Kyle for their playmaking, but also both of them are effective shooting. And the other big reason why I want to start Tyus along with Kyle Joe is because I don't know if Kyle is able to keep up the production that he's offered with the ball in his hands that much, because he's found a lot of opportunity in catch and shoot situations, getting passes that put him in advantageous situations to drive to the basket or to get good shots in the mid-range. I would like to see Kyle continue to operate off the ball, because I think his intelligence is really impactful that way. So I think with Tyus, though he is struggling, if he gets going again, I think he's one of your five best players. And at the end of the day, besides there being multiple options in the most important situations with that lineup, I think with Tyus, Dylan, Kyle, Brandon Clark, and Jonas Valanciunas, you just naturally have your five best available players right now to start and end the game. So that would be my lineup.
I think that that's probably what Taylor Jenkins is going to do. I think that the Grayson Allen experiment has run its course. I think that he should not be in the starting lineup. This is an opportunity for Taylor to say, oh, we're going to rearrange it, make it work so that everybody in the starting five or the closing five, as you just referenced there, Tyus, Dylan, Kyle, Brandon, Jonas, theoretically gives you your best chance. I think that that's fair. I also think that it's boring, Sean. And I think that Tyus has struggled so mightily. And I think that Brandon Clark, up until Monday, had struggled so mightily. And I think that those two together are so good in a reserve role that I personally, this is my preference, I agree with you that that's probably what's going to happen. Or they'll just put Brandon Clark in the starting five as the Ja Morant replacement, quote unquote, and they'll let Kyle be that point forward that we were talking about. I think those are more likely scenarios. But again, throughout this show, we've talked about how do you recreate the space that Ja Morant can provide. There is one player on this team right now who is displaying the capacity to do something at an elite level, whose name is not Ja Morant. You already know his name. It's Desmond Bane. Desmond Bane is shooting the three at, and again, it's a small sample size, it's early, you're exactly right, at an elite level. Is he likely to cool off? Sure, he's likely to cool off. But you know what cooling off looks like for Desmond Bane? A career average of 43% from three. So if you've got somebody who is going to almost certainly, likely, be a 40% or better three-point shooter for you in the NBA, and we talk about gravity, right? That's my least favorite modern NBA phrase, shooting gravity. Jay Crowder has shooting gravity because he launches threes. I can have shooting gravity. I'll launch threes. Give me $10,000 for the whole year, and I'll launch threes and call my gravity, okay? Jay Crowder shoots 29.3%, and people want to argue for gravity. Sorry, I had my rant. My bad. Desmond Bane is legitimately a threat to shoot those threes. So to me, if we're talking about air quote gravity, and we want to create as much space as we can without Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Grayson Allen, Kyle Anderson, Dylan Brooks, Jonas Valanciunas, with Kyle as that point forward, that makes the most sense. Now, Desmond Bane has shortcomings. He has a negative wingspan. He was lost at times defensively against the Nets. I don't have any illusions of grandeur. He's going to make rookie mistakes, but we are far from an ideal situation, Sean. And I think that if you are putting Brandon and Tyus in a position to be a strong bench unit and continue to rekindle that chemistry that they had from last year, that allows for you to play even or a little bit worse than even with the starters. And then once you start working in the Tyuses and the Brandons, you can build a lead or you can get back into a competitive point because your reserves are so strong. And I know that one thing that both you and I can agree on, I highly doubt that the true bench mob, all, you know, just a straight group of second unit guys, that's probably not going to happen with Morant out. He's going to, and to Taylor Jenkins' credit, he has done that. He's had very little true bench groups. He has started to adjust and, you know, have a Dylan Brooks and Jonas Valanciunas with Tyus and Brandon and John Conchar, for example. You really look at what this team needs to do. And again, how do you find that space? To me, you have a guy in Desmond Bane who has shown the capacity to be an elite three-point shooter. That gives you four guys, including Kyle, who can hit those threes. It allows for Jonas to work a little more carefree in and around the block, around the basket, get him cleaner looks. I think that maximizes your potential. I do believe that Taylor Jenkins is going to ride his vets in this adverse time. I believe that what you said about Clark and Tyus and that group, if they don't start games, they'll certainly close them. It's just not what I would do because, again, I'm trying to figure out how do I recreate that space. And in the absence of elite athleticism, I'll take the possible elite shooting that Desmond Bane brings to the table.
And I think that that is very sensible because the one thing that that lineup does do is it gets you the best combination of consistency when it comes to distance shooting, which of course, you know, Taylor Jenkins, you know, looks for. And the other big flaw about mine that I'll certainly admit is that you're starting your two most sensible ball handlers in the starting lineup. And if you're only going to play them 30 minutes to 35 minutes a night, that means for 10 to 15 minutes, Joe, you got someone not on the floor. You know, that's not, you've got people on the floor, not named Kyle Anderson or Tyus Jones. You've got maybe Grayson Allen, maybe Desmond Bane running the point, and I just don't see that having any type of success, you know, more than a minute maybe. So, of course, the thing about, you know, my suggestion as far as the starters go, you're probably going to have to stagger Kyle and Tyus, one of the two being on the court for at least 40 to 45 minutes a night so that you have some sort of veteran who knows how to handle the ball. So I agree it's going to be a lot of customization. The thing that I'll ask you is this. Is that so? Talking about the playmaking aspect of things, we know Kyle is there. We know that, you know, Tyus hopefully will regain what he had. But we've seen, in my opinion, a step up when it comes to playmaking from players such as Grayson Allen and Dylan Brooks and Desmond Bane, you know, to an extent as well. I think the other thing that this opportunity really creates is Taylor Jenkins being able to develop that playmaking aspect of the roster that he wants so badly to be up and down the roster. I think this is a great opportunity for him to develop that in several of his players that once his full team comes back, everyone will be able to contribute in that area. That may be another silver lining about the current situation the Grizzlies are in.
It's going to force guys like Dylan Brooks to do those things if they want to win. Like Dylan Brooks should turn on film, if he hasn't already done so in the past 24 hours, from the bubble games, where he, in fairness to Dylan, Ja Morant deferred to Dylan at times, and Dylan Brooks launched shots. That's the Dylan that people can't stand. It's not the mentality as much as it is the lack of judgment when it comes to making the right basketball play, which Dylan does at times. He does. Even the most ardent Dylan Brooks defenders should be able to admit that. Nobody is perfect, far be it for me to say that, because I am one of the most imperfect folks there are. Dylan Brooks is not, or there is, see, perfect example. Dylan Brooks is very much that from a basketball perspective, but you need Dylan Brooks to continue to learn and understand that. And he's shown more flashes of that than he ever has before. That's promising. You don't want him to say, okay, Ja is out. It's my team now. No, that can't be the mentality. Okay, Ja is out. It's our team. How do we do this together? And Dylan Brooks is an extremely important piece of that, but he has to understand it's others around him that need to, when he drives to the basket, because he's one of the few guys that can create his own shot on a consistent basis. Okay, I have the wraparound to Brandon Clark, or I have Grayson out in the corner, or Desmond Bane out in the corner, John Conchar up at the top of the key, Gorgui Dieng up at the top of the key. I need to find these guys. I need to make it so that our offense can swing the ball more efficiently and it doesn't just stop with me. There's going to be times where the best shot is Dylan Brooks doing that. And people that hate Dylan Brooks are going to hate that I said that, but it's true. There's times where Dylan, when he's in his zone, creating his own shot and rising up and hitting it is the best offense the Grizzlies can provide. Okay? But that doesn't mean that you do it every time. And hopefully that's the realization that Dylan and everybody around Dylan will come to. It can't be done just by one person. You have to rely on Grayson Allen, even though he has struggled. You're right. He has done better as a facilitator this year. The numbers back that up, as does the eye test. Desmond Bane, I think, is more than capable of being able to be that guy in the pick and roll. Is his handle a little bit loose? I think people overblow that personally, but he makes decisions faster than his body allows for him to react. And I think that is more of a concern in terms of his passes that he throws at times than his handle. And maybe it's just two different languages saying the same issue, but you got to let the kid try, because you watch his college film and he's one of the guys that is able in the pick and roll to create in that combo guard kind of mentality. So you have to give him the reins and let him do it a little bit. Let him make the mistakes, because that's how you grow. That's how you learn. The best way to learn is to do. And that allows for Desmond to do those things. Same thing with Kyle Anderson, more of that point guard role. And the elephant in the room is Justice Winslow. You've been on these media calls with me, Sean. Zach Kleiman talks about Winslow being ready before Jaren. Zach Kleiman talks about how if the season had started around Martin Luther King Day, like it was originally reported, Jaren would have been close to ready. I know that it frustrates folks that we don't get clear as day timelines from the Grizzlies front office when it comes to this stuff. But if you read the tea leaves, Justice should be good to go in a couple of weeks. So Justice Winslow is somebody that is going to have to come in and all of a sudden be asked to be more than perhaps he's ready to be, considering he hasn't played competitive, meaningful basketball in about a year. So there's a lot of guys that all together as a collective are going to have to recreate playmaking that Ja would provide that is no longer there. There is no one player that's capable of doing that. It has to be Dylan. It has to be Grayson. It has to be Melton when he returns. It has to be Bane. It has to be Conchar to a lesser extent. All these players have to try to come together and understand that the movement of the ball is more important than the dribble. The extra pass is more important than the extra shot, Dylan Brooks. You have to prioritize getting the best look possible as often as possible, because the room for error is much more condensed without elite talent like Ja Morant on the floor.
And I agree. It's not going to be one person. It is the depth that's there. And that's one thing that Taylor Jenkins has focused on, you know, by experimenting a little bit, you know, with some different, you know, kind of unorthodox lineups. And the good thing is that we talked about it coming into the season, Joe. The depth in the front court and the depth in the back court were certainly great things, especially in a year such as COVID. But, you know, the Grizzlies, I don't think, knew that they would have to rely on it as heavily as they are, especially in the backcourt, you know, so early in the season due to injuries. But we know that the guard depth has definitely paid off so far because of how deep we have it. Unfortunately, we have not seen the same thing in the front court. Coming up, I'll talk, go into depth with Joe a bit about the front court and look to see how that could play itself out going forward. It's once again another new year, and as most of us have become, you know, routine to doing in our lives, there's probably resolutions that we want to set out that we know we would like to commit to making life better, but it becomes hard to make it a part of the daily routine, even with us being so committed to getting a healthier lifestyle, starting a new job, whatever it may be, whatever life change you're going through, it can be hard to commit. It's like a wall is there to help you have the energy to make each day productive and really move forward with the towards the goals that you have in mind. Well, one thing that I could certainly add to the equation that would boost your ability to meet your goals quickly, effectively, and maintain them is Built Go. Built Go is the best 1.5-ounce workout gel package on the market. It's like 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. It's like a monster drink with a third of the caffeine. It comes in three delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. And the great thing is it also combines energy gel with collagen protein. So, plus, also it combines beta-alanine, B3 honey, and a kick of caffeine. All these ingredients allow for you to have in a very, very small package that is a good for an afternoon or morning snack. It allows for you to not only have the energy to get through the day, but to remain productive as well. If you visit BuiltGo.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, again, that's BuiltGo.com, and you'll get 20% off your next order from BuiltGo. Again, the best 1.5-ounce energy gel package on the market that will help you overcome any wall that you may run into. BuiltGo. Go to BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED. That's the promo code LOCKED to get 20% off your next order at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. If you want to get basketball smart, it starts with listening to the Hollinger and Duncan podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, NBA analytics pioneer and front office insider John Hollinger joins Dunked On podcast host Nate Duncan to bring you scouting reports, game breakdowns, and salary cap analysis. Subscribe to Hollinger and Duncan today wherever you get your podcast. So, Joe, I did a podcast a few weeks ago looking at the hierarchy of different positions. And, you know, with just all the players that have been out, you know, the main players are out. But, you know, of course, you know, and we'll get into this in a second. Jonte Porter, Killian Tilly, Xavier Tillman, young versatile depth that the Grizzlies had put a lot of investment into to be here this year to help them develop as well. Haven't got the chance to due to injuries. And because of that, the Grizzlies have had to go with some unorthodox lineups to give Jonas some breathers, some 3 and 4 guard lineups, John Concher, Tyus Jones, Grayson Allen, Desmond Bane, all these guards playing. You saw that a lot in the Atlanta game, especially. Just your thoughts on that. And while it did seem to produce better results as it played, it does seem like there are some limitations of how often you can use them.
I think it depends on matchups. Depending on the matchup, I would argue that you should try Kyle Anderson at center as long as all these bigs are out. And you go with those 4 guards around Kyle. And now you have a point center in Kyle Anderson. Now, does that make sense against a team with a dominant big? Of course it doesn't. You need Jonas. You need Yang to try to body down low and contain those guys. But against the Hawks, to me, that could have been an opportunity with all the bigs that were out for you to go smaller and see what you can do in terms of 5-out offense and creating off of the dribble penetration and kickouts and that sort of thing. It was a missed opportunity, in my opinion. But when you analyze what Taylor Jenkins is trying to do, and you made a fair point there a moment ago, there are so many guys out. You're up to 7 now with Ja Morant out. With Ja Morant out. So even with the extended rosters, you now have 10 guys that are active to play with 7 dudes out. So you're in a tough spot. And I think Taylor, to his credit, is trying to be creative and put pieces of things together and figure out what the best fit is moving forward. And that's going to be only more complicated as you adjust to life without Ja Morant. But again, it's a window for opportunity. How do you perceive it? Do you just say that, oh, well, we're screwed, and you know, you start looking up the stats for Gonzaga and Oklahoma State basketball games? Or do you view it as an opportunity to expand what your team down the road can be capable of in terms of developing skill? And I think Desmond Bane's a good example of that. Justice Winslow, who we mentioned a little while ago, is an example of that. And in this regard, with all these bigs out, it allows for you to truly dive in to this idea of positionless small basketball, and you have possibilities where Dylan Brooks or Desmond Bane are playing the small ball 4. There's openings there. You have a chance to take the slings and the arrows, because it's not going to work perfectly, but you can also see what it looks like and execute. And then down the road, when it's Jaren Jackson Jr. instead of Kyle Anderson playing that big role, you have a better understanding of what it will look like with a superior player in that spot. So I personally would not look at it as taxing. Okay, Jonas has to play 34 minutes, and that means Gorgie plays 14, and wow, they're going to be really tired. I would say play them their normal allotment of minutes, and in the 8 to 10 that you need to fill in, get weird. You know, the same thing with Kyle Anderson and Tyus Jones that you mentioned earlier. You have those two guys that you can count on to be those creators of offense as a point guard. What do you do in the potential 8 to 10 minutes that they're not out there? Well, let Grayson Allen do it, you know, in the here and now, while Justice Winslow and D'Anthony Melton are out. Let a Desmond Bane try it, right? Let these guys put in the work and try to develop and grow and find themselves offensively, and don't run away from it. Because this, like we talked about earlier, this is the year before the year where there's expectations. And this should be viewed as a moment of clarity in that, okay, instead of trying to piece this together as best I can and find ways to traditionally do it, I would go in the opposite direction. I would yang to the yin. I would look for ways to make myself as different as possible and really try to exploit mismatches where they present themselves. Like I said, if you're playing Philly here in a couple of weeks and Jaren's still out, and, you know, I'm not lining up Kyle Anderson against Joel Embiid necessarily, right? I'm not going to let Desmond Bane get bodied by Tobias Harris on the block. But at the same time, if the matchup calls for it, like Jason Tatum, I think primarily plays the four now. Jason Tatum is a very, very, very good basketball player. Why can't Dylan Brooks play the four and defend Jason Tatum, who's primarily a perimeter four man anyway, and, you know, do some more small ball stuff with Kyle as your five? I think that there's windows and there's glimpses of possibility that if Taylor Jenkins is willing to take the leap, could in the long run especially be beneficial in terms of developing skill and talent for when you do have all of your pieces back in play.
And that's another thing, and I agree with you. You know, there are times, and Taylor Jenkins has proven, you know, with the aid of his staff, that they have an understanding enough to know when to use these type of lineups to really be effective. But another disappointing aspect of this year, Joe, in my opinion, you know how much I enjoyed the idea of Killian Tilly, for instance, being in Taylor Jenkins' system, Tillman, Porter, obviously. This front office has a clear mold that it likes for its front court depth pieces. But like you said, like we mentioned multiple times on the podcast so far, this is an opportunity for clarity, an opportunity for you to learn about which guys will clearly step up and you know, perform their role well to be a future part of the team. And it seems like it's a missed opportunity for these guys with their injuries. Just how concerned are you with the injuries and potentially the missed development time, especially in a time where they could get more run than they usually would right now with the stars out due to injuries?
I guess it comes down to how much run you realistically think they would get. Like with Jonas Valanciunas, I would imagine he's playing around 28 minutes a night. I don't have it right in front of me, but that's roughly his career average. Gorgui Dieng is playing about 12 minutes or so. We've seen plenty of evidence that Kyle Anderson is better at the four, whether he's bringing the ball up or not, that traditional four-man spot. How many minutes are there for Xavier Tillman or for Killian Tilly, who's on a two-way contract? Sean McDermott has only seen, you know, cleanup duty in early minutes here in the NBA. So I guess I hear what you're saying, and I do wish that you could, obviously, I want to see Jonte Porter, I want to see Tillman play. But how much would they actually play? Would they beat out Gorgui Dieng? I would hope so. But we talked earlier about how Jay Crowder, because of his shooting gravity, quote unquote, and being a veteran presence, was playing more than Kyle Anderson. So would Dieng be over? Would he be left over by Tillman and by Porter? I hope so. But I have no evidence to suggest that that would certainly occur. So I agree that they need development. They need those minutes. They need reps. But there's no promises that they'd be getting them anyway. So I do think it's a missed opportunity for practice. I think it's a missed opportunity that they have to prioritize, you know, conditioning and getting their injuries taken care of. But at the same time, in terms of live game action, while I'm hopeful that a Tillman or a Porter in particular, because they're not on the two-way contracts, would get those minutes ahead of Gorgui, I'm not convinced that that's what Taylor Jenkins would do. And because of that, I'm much more concerned about the backcourt development at this stage, because Gorgui Dieng is going to be gone. And I don't foresee the Grizzlies selecting any other bigs. You know, Tillman signed a four-year contract. Porter signed a multi-year deal. Those guys are going to be around for the long term. You really got to figure out on the wing in particular, if Memphis has a lottery pick this year, it's almost certainly going to be used on a wing player. You know, who's going to be here long-term, who's not? I feel like the bigs that are going to be here, at least for the 2021-2022 season, they're already here. So you have a little bit more time with those guys. I know the backcourt guys are under contract too, but I feel like there's just a greater volume of uncertainty with them, be it by trade or whatever you might have there in front of them, that there's more opportunity for them to show what they can do than there is for the front court at this stage. And maybe I'm wrong for that. Like I said, I would like to believe that Porter and Tillman would beat out Dieng, but there's nothing to suggest that that is the case, given especially considering how Tillman played in those limited preseason minutes. He looked even more lost than Bane did.
And that's a very good point. And I do agree with you that, you know, I think that the veterans would still be relied upon. But I also want to get your thoughts on this perspective. One other reason why I think it may be a bit of a missed opportunity is because if those young players, like you mentioned, Tillman and Porter, you know, if they got a little bit of opportunity and they saw that they could produce, they saw that they could grow, you know, looking at the pieces that will be here for the present and future versus just the present, and for an organization that clearly is still focused on the future. You know, I've mentioned it a few times. If the Grizzlies were to see their season continue to, you know, clearly be, you know, a season for development, and the playoffs just seem to be, you know, in a, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, it's not realistic where the playoffs make sense. Do you feel that we start to see a bit more sense being made that a piece like a Tyus Jones or like a Jonas Valanciunas, probably more Jonas than Tyus, you know, if you would have gotten your front court pieces, your depth pieces to play well, that type of thing right there would let the Grizzlies think, okay, what if we were to take a present piece and trade it for future assets that can help us get controllable assets when we'll be closer to contention? My question becomes, if what's occurred leads to the Grizzlies, you know, losing more than they win, do you think that potentially makes a, you know, unexpected piece like a Jonas or, you know, a Tyus or someone like that available at the trade deadline? Do you think it makes them more available than we had initially expected for future assets?
Maybe. I think that something that jumped out to me from Zach Kleiman and his preseason media availability is he talked about how in year one, the first full year of this rebuild, because people like to say that this is year three of the rebuild, and I disagree with that completely. As long as Mike Conley and Marc Gasol were still on this roster, you were not rebuilding, in my opinion. You had injury issues. You had all sorts of other things going on. But the rebuild began when Mike Conley got traded to the Jazz, in my opinion. And I think Zach Kleiman would agree with that. In year one, it was about asset accumulation, and they had success with that. They're the second youngest roster in the NBA. They have multiple draft picks that they've used to bring in a Desmond Bane and a Xavier Tillman. They have two first-round picks from the Jazz and Warriors, respectively, that they can either use to draft other players, or they can use to trade up in drafts, or they can use as a larger package to bring in another player. So they've done the asset accumulation. In year two, Zach Kleiman said he wants to do data collection. He wants to figure out exactly what the hell he has. And I think that you have a clearer picture of that with Tyus and Jonas than, say, a D'Anthony Melton, certainly more so than a Grayson Allen. But at the same time, if you are trying to be competitive next season, which I think most people agree should be a goal, like this year you went into it saying, hey, if they compete, that's great. If they don't compete, all well. 2021-2022 is not going to have that. Especially if you're healthy, the Grizzlies should be in the playoff hunt, not the play-in hunt, the playoff hunt. And you're going to need a pretty steady point guard in Tyus Jones. You're going to need a pretty steady big in Jonas Valanciunas. So for the right deal, I think they'd certainly be willing to do such a thing. But I also don't see them doing anything to rush what their plan is. I don't see them saying, oh, John Morant's out, Jaren Jackson Jr.'s out, we're going to go ahead and just punt this season. I think that that would go against what their stated goal of data collection is. Again, I go back to my previous point. Now you're going to get a different kind of data. When these guys are put in adverse situations, things are not going their way, they are not in a position to be their best selves, what is their personality going to be? How are they going to do? Are they going to lay down? Are they going to take it? Are they going to just allow these outside factors that they can't control to completely blow up their games? Or are they going to be, oh, I keep bringing them up, but are they going to be like Dylan Brooks? Are they going to show up for work every night? Are they going to play their tails off? Are they going to compete and try to help the team win? Dylan's not perfect, but he tries to help the team win every chance he can. And that's what they're looking for. They're trying to collect data. So if they think that they can do that without Jonas Valanciunas, and or at least not compared to, say, if Charlotte is in the playoff hunt, and before people say they wouldn't do this, Charlotte signed Gordon Hayward to a $120 million contract. So I think that's out the window in terms of logic. If the Charlotte Hornets wanted to send the expiring contract of Cody Zeller and a future first or a young player for Jonas Valanciunas to be better right now, because Charlotte is tired of missing the playoffs, then yeah, you consider that deal. But I don't think you go out and accelerate and try to get into that asset accumulation mode if it doesn't come to you, because you have so many young pieces already, you might as well figure out what you have on the roster and go from there into next offseason.
And I think you bring up two great points. You know, the Grizzlies have afforded themselves a position to where, you know, they did a great job in asset accumulation. So you now can kind of sit back and see what comes to you. And you also bring up a very good point as well, is that at some point, you want to build off the success of last year, and if there's progression up and down the roster this year, by really making a playoff push next year, and with players like Dylan and Tyus and Jonas, that certainly is there. And I think that Jonas or Tyus are in that same way as Dylan Brooks, where they're going to show up every day. They support the youth that's there. They know the roles. They're confident in themselves to do it, and they take pride to do it. And there's a lot of value in that. And I think that that is something for someone like me, as it's probably known, you know, who always is willing to pull a trade, make sense. There also is plenty of value in standing pat with what you have. And as we all know, the Grizzlies certainly should be confident, you know, with what they currently have. Well, Joe, obviously we've had another great conversation tonight, but with the new year coming around the corner, obviously it's a new calendar year for GBB, yourself, Grizzly Bear Blues Live. What's going on in your neck of the woods as we enter 2021?
Oh, sure. Well, we've got game coverage. Whenever there's a game, make GBB a place where you get your game previews, your recaps, all sorts of different things. We've got Parker Fleming, who's leading our charge covering games in FedEx Forum. We have our podcast network. We have four shows a week. Four different shows, Starting Five, Core Four, 3&D, and then, of course, GBB Live. Kelsey Wright Johnson of Grind City Media is going to be our guest on GBB Live this week. There's a lot going on at GBB, and I always say our staff is our strength. Sean, you're a huge part of that. And, you know, just continued quality quantity, as I like to put it. We put out a lot of stuff, but it's not a bunch of junk. It's not, you know, Ja Morant is taking a picture with a giraffe, and, you know, you hope to get clicks off of that. And I'm not saying that's not wonderful content. That's adorable. But you understand my point. You get numbers dives. You get game coverage. You get features. You get all sorts of different things up and down the online spectrum when it comes to the Memphis Grizzlies and GrizzlyBearBlues.com. And like I said, Sean, you're a big piece of that. So just keep coming to GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Subscribe to the GBB Podcast Network. Make us and the Locked On Grizzlies podcast your go-to listening, and you'll be better for it when it comes to the Memphis Grizzlies.
And I cannot echo that enough. There's just some great talent that's over there, and you can't speak enough to you know, Joe's leadership, you know, the effort that Parker has done, and Brandon Abraham, and then the rest of the great guys over there. You know, it feels like a family, and it really is, you know, a fun time. It's definitely, you always get the support that you want, but you also get excited when you're able to work on a piece and put it out there and know that it's going to be received well and really be promoted by the folks that you're with as well. For Joe, Joe, if you'll stay with us, for Joe Molinax, my name is Sean Coleman. We cannot thank you enough. You can find the show at Locked On Grizz, myself at Stats SAC, the podcast, wherever podcasts are available. We will come back with another nitty-gritty grind session looking at the Boston Celtics a bit later on today, the game preview, and, of course, follow up with the game review on Thursday and Friday. For Joe Molinax, my name is Sean Coleman. We'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.